I remember when Dean Browning touted his conservative values as a candidate for Lehigh County Commissioner about 8 years ago now. As a liberal with an activist view of the role of government, I was, to be candid, a bit concerned. 2 years ago, or three, running for re-election while chairing the Board of Commissioners, Dean was unceremoniously tossed out of office by a movement that came from his right. I wondered how there could be someone to his right. Sure enough, there was. It was a newcomer, at least to me, named Scott Ott. Scott was the leader of a movement some might call anti-government, some might call small government. His term is reform movement that ended up pulling off a pretty significant upset in that election. On May 21st, just around the corner, Lehigh County Republicans will choose their candidate to run against presumptive Democratic nominee Tom Mueller, who, interestingly enough, was a Republican not too long ago. So you could argue that we've got three Republicans in this race. Republicans will choose between the aforementioned Dean Browning and Scott Ott, and I have both of them in the studio with me. I'm Alan Jennings. By day, most nights, and pretty much every weekend, I'm the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. I've been doing anti-poverty work and trying to make the world a better place, at least by my definition, for more than 30 years. And once a month, sometimes twice or even three times a month, the local NPR affiliate, WDIY, gives me this microphone and the opportunity to talk public affairs on a program called Lehigh Valley Discourse. So you are listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on listener-supported community public radio. And again, I'm Alan Jennings. My guests tonight are Dean Browning, anxious for redemption, and Scott Ott, determined not to yield an inch. Scott, Dean, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, let's start. We've got a wide-ranging conversation. I want to make sure our listeners know that I hate the discomfort of, we're in a cozy little studio, virtually elbow to elbow, and it would be awfully uncomfortable if we got too negative on each other. And so if we do, I'm going to be typical me and take the side of the victim in the exchange. And so I hope that we'll try to keep this as up and positive as we can, recognizing that you disagree with each other. And certainly it's fair enough to point those disagreements out. Let's start with the question of where you got your political views. Dean, I think you were the first elected to the position of county commissioner. So let's start with you. Where did you get your political views?
Thank you, Alan. That's a great question. I am originally from a small town in Kentucky. Lebanon, Kentucky is where I grew up. My mother's side of the family was farmers. My dad's side of the family is from Harlan, Kentucky, coal miners. It's my family and that background where I really got my political views. Small town, hardworking, cost-conscious environment, and that's what I grew up in, and that's really the formation of my political views.
How did you end up in the Lehigh Valley?
It's sort of a long story. My folks moved from Kentucky when I was about ready to go into high school. We moved to Cincinnati. From there, I went to college at Denison University in Granville, Ohio, and from there to graduate school at Georgia Tech, where I've got my master's in industrial management. And coming out of school at Georgia Tech, Air Products, here a local company, had a program called the Career Development Program, which was tailored for individuals such as myself coming out of school, giving you an opportunity to try several different functional areas within a company. So I came here to work for Air Products in 1979 and have been here ever since.
Like so many people before you, Air Products has brought a lot of talented people to the Lehigh Valley. Scott Ott, your political views, how'd they form?
That's a good question, and I don't know that I consciously know, how everything came together. I know it was a transition over a long period of years. I was, when I was about 5 years old, my dad ran away from home, leaving four boys. And then when
and
I was
in those
about,
days, that was pretty tumultuous. These days, it's almost a common
thing. But when I was 6 years old, my mom ran away from home. And so we wound up being brought up by my maternal grandfather, James McMaster, who grew up during the Depression on a farm in Roxborough, which if you drive through Roxborough in Philadelphia right now, you'll wonder where they put the dairy farm because it's all houses now and businesses. But my grandfather was an avowed ultra-conservative. That's how he would describe himself. And I spent most of probably 15 years or more fighting with him about everything. Anything that was in the news.
Typical kind of teenage resistance kind of thing.
Yeah, I was like, I was Meathead and he was Archie, for those older listeners who remember All in the Family. And it was funny. I always thought he was wrong, and he always knew I was wrong. And we spent a great deal of time arguing politics. When I first registered to vote, I registered independent. I didn't want to be beholden to any particular party. I don't know if I would have described myself as a liberal, but in hindsight, I look back and I say, yeah, I was liberal. I would have described myself as a feminist at the time. And so then over a period of years, you know, my trade was journalism, and I got a degree in journalism from Penn State. And I spent a great deal of time covering both local and national political issues. And I think little by little, in the course of having to earn a living for yourself and pay taxes and to study the way that government actually functions at a local level, which I got to do close up because I was covering school boards and township supervisors meetings and things like that, I began to wonder whether the whole system wasn't broken. Eventually, I changed my voter registration to Republican, frankly, mostly because I wanted to be able to vote in primaries.
It's the best reason I can think of. Dean, your perspective on the Lehigh Valley and how you came to view it as home and then view it as a place where you wanted to be involved in politics. Are there any turning points in your life that took you from, you know, being a company man at Dare Products to wanting to get involved in politics? Did you see yourself as potentially a politician when you were, you know, 25 years old or 15 years old?
No, I didn't. And quite honestly, I still don't view myself as a politician. Back to your first question, what led me to stay in the Lehigh Valley? I've always been an outdoors type of person. As I said, I grew up in a small town in Kentucky. My grandparents had a farm, so I spent a lot of time on the farm, a lot of time outdoors. One of the things that attracted me to the Lehigh Valley in particular was the fact that I could work for a major corporation. If I wanted some cultural activity, Philadelphia and New York were close by, but if I wanted outdoor activities, I could go skiing at what was then Little Gap, but is now Blue Mountain. I could go hunting and fishing within 20 or 30 minutes drive from my house. So there were many activities and many attributes of the Lehigh Valley that attracted me, that led me to decide that I wanted to stay here. Even though I've long since moved on from Air Products and have worked with a number of other companies in the area, but all within the Lehigh Valley.
Community involvement, volunteering anywhere, boards of directors, nonprofit involvement, your church, any of those kinds of things?
I've always been active in that area, beginning with my church. One of the first churches I joined here was Heidelberg Lutheran Church, and I was on the council there for a number of years. I've also volunteered and been on the board of directors of the Allentown Rescue Mission for a number of years. And since becoming commissioner, one of the activities that you find yourself drawn into is when you're a commissioner, there are a number of boards that are looking for your involvement. And since then, I've become active in the Da Vinci Center and in the Boy Scouts.
Scott, community involvement, what have you got?
I'm heavily involved in my church, and my wife is the director of children's ministry there. And so in order to, I hear what the challenges are in her job, and so I'm always trying to find a way that I can help and make that less challenging for her. So they let me be involved in the children's programs on Saturday morning or Sunday morning. I've also taught people of all ages in Sunday school, and that's where my primary focus is right now. Now, over the years, I've been involved in a number of different nonprofit organizations. I was first a volunteer and then became vice chairman and then chairman of the board of a group called the Abuse Network when I lived in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. We provided counseling and other referral services for women who were victims of rape and domestic violence. I started a not-for-profit organization that rescued an old theater, one of those mini palace theaters called the Embassy Theater in Lewistown. I've also coached basketball. I was president of the Shoemaker Elementary School parent-teacher organization, and I'm sure there are other things that I'm not remembering at the moment.
This is one of those kind of standard campaign questions that I'll apologize to my listeners for asking, but I think these kinds of, character questions, I think are important. What skills or expertise do you bring to the office of Lehigh County Executive? It's got a $300 million plus budget, which is just an awesome task, if you ask me. I'm not sure how many employees, many hundreds, a lot fewer than there were a few years ago. What would you argue do you have on your resume that would make you qualified to manage all of that? Scott?
Most of my experience in management and leadership has been in the not-for-profit sector. I mean, for 5 years, I was executive director of a not-for-profit Christian children's camp. I mentioned that I was involved with the Abuse Network with the Embassy Theater, and my role has always been in the not-for-profit sector to find ways to get volunteers to be excited about either serving or giving. And over the course of doing that for a number of years, I began to realize that even in a workplace where you have supervisory authority to tell people what to do, in reality, everybody's a volunteer, and they can walk if they wish, or they can passively resist what you want them to do.
How true.
My approach, typically I've been a catalyst for change as I've come into organizations. When I've been hired at places, they have been in a situation where they had a problem that they needed to solve, and they brought me in to do that. And my approach has been first to get to know the people on the front lines. And business consultants figured this out a long time ago. If you want to look really impressive, you go into a company, you interview all the frontline employees, you put that in a PowerPoint presentation, and then you show it to the executives, and they go, I've never heard that before, because they haven't been listening to the people on the front lines. But typically, most organizations have within them the seeds of their own success, and that's typically contained in the hearts and minds of the people who are doing the real work of the organization.
Dean Browning.
First, my background is in business and finance. I've worked for over 30 years in the private sector, starting out with Air Products. One of my responsibilities right before I left Air Products was as manager of operations accounting. And in that role, I was responsible for putting together a budget in excess of $500 million. So I've got experience with numbers of that size and scope. And I've worked for a variety of different organizations, as I mentioned earlier, which has given me a broad perspective of different activities and how to manage different people in those activities. Throughout my career of 30-plus years, I've always prided myself on having the ability to identify problems and then come up with solutions to address that problem and then to take the next step to get those solutions implemented. One example that I'll give that's relevant to Lehigh County, when I came on as commissioner in 2008, we had a compensation system that was giving employees two increases, in essence, every year, a general increase, cost of living increase, and a merit or a step increase. It was called a merit increase, but basically everyone got it, and it was the same amount. So it was a given increase. We had employees getting two increases. I identified that as a problem, proposed a solution to that, and then worked with the administration and others within government to get that enacted, first to change it for non-union employees, and then when the union contracts were up for renegotiation, to have that actually implemented in the union contracts. So again, that's a demonstration of my ability to identify a problem, propose a solution, and work to get it implemented.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings, and my guests this evening are Scott Ott, who is a current commissioner in Lehigh County and candidate for Lehigh County Executive on the Republican side, Dean Browning, former commissioner on the Board of Commissioners in Lehigh County and also a candidate for County Executive in Lehigh County. My guess is there are probably a lot of people out there thinking, that, boy, this is weird. Jennings interviewing Ott and Browning. And I got to tell you, I've looked forward to this for some time because our views are different. I got to say that, I find both of these gentlemen to be charming, smart, committed, serious about their desire to make the world a better place. I think it's safe to say that we might agree to disagree on some of the ways we get there, but I don't think anybody could question the principles or the motivation of both of these gentlemen. In political circles, there are two ways of looking at people who are elected to office. One is a delegate role, the other one is a trustee role. As a trustee, you see yourself as being entrusted by the voters to do what you think is right. And as a delegate, you are seen as a person who represents the views of those voters as you see them. Let's start with you, Dean. Would you consider yourself a delegate or a trustee by those definitions?
This may sound like a cop-out, but I consider myself a bit of both. I think it depends on the situation. For example, the delegate role, if you're running, if you're campaigning and you make a specific promise or a pledge, then you're bound to fulfill that. I view that as acting more in the delegate role. Outside of that, there are other items that come up during your term in office that obviously you have not considered during the campaign, and you're not in the position to go out and poll the voters on every issue. You're elected there to exercise your judgment. That's why they put you there. So in those situations, you act as a trustee.
Scott, trustee, delegate.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with the way Dean described this. And what it makes me think of, one of the things I did in my employment, I work for an online TV network where one of the projects we did was called Freedom's Charter, which was a study of why the U.S. Constitution is written the way it is. And one of the challenges that they had early on in the early days before the Constitution was that people would gather, they called it out of doors. So essentially it was mobs. Mobs of people would get together. They would decide that they wanted to accomplish something in particular. They would tell their elected legislator who was going to the state assembly what they wanted him to do. And they believed that he was bound to do that because they had told him that he must do that. James Madison took a little bit of a different, in fact, in many ways, a reaction against that sort of mob democratic rule as he saw it happening in the states. And he wanted to have more of a representative republic model so that, realizing that, as Dean said, there are all these issues that come up when you're in office that you never could have anticipated when you were running for office. And you can't poll the voters on every one of them and just say, okay, well, whatever the 51% says, I'm going to vote for. I think you come at it with a combination of, look, I said some things while I was running for office. I intend to accomplish those things. And in a way, you're entrusting me for the next 4 years to use my best judgment because you have some understanding of the kind of perspective I have on government.
We are listening to and chatting with Dean Browning and Scott Ott, both candidates on the Republican side for Lehigh County Executive. And I think we've got a guy who's pretty conservative. Dean, I had you on my show a year or so ago, and along with Mike Dowd, two county commissioners who had both been relieved, if you will, by the voters. And I remember referring to Brad Osborne as a moderate, and you came back and said, I want to defend Brad Osborne. I said, well, why? I called him a moderate. You said that a moderate is considered an insult by Republican standards these days. But I got to say, you're moderate in this race against Scott Ott, who I think is a pretty solid conservative. Would you consider that to be a fair assessment?
No, I still disagree with that. I would say that we're both conservatives. I think we have a different view of conservatism. Scott, we were on a debate several weeks ago where Scott gave a fairly good definition of his view of conservatism. I have a slightly different view of conservatism. I think we both want the same things for government. It's just a question of, I think we've got a different approach on how to get there.
Scott, I'm going to hope that was an acceptable response because I've got to take a break. Again, you're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings, and I have the two Republican candidates for county executive in Lehigh County in the studio with me, and we'll return to Dean Browning and Scott Ott on the other side of this brief break. Stay with us.
place where you live.
Now there's no
one. Think about direction, wonder why you have it now.
Stand in the place where you were.
Now face west.
Think about the place where you live, wonder why you haven't before.
If you are confused, check with the sun.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem Southside and their 32nd season, presenting the 8th Annual Young Playwrights Festival, featuring plays written by area students, with directions and performances by the Touchstone Ensemble and community guest artists. Saturday, May 18th, 7 p.m., Baker Hall at Zollner Arts Center. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
Let me tell you. One for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
Okay, we're back with Lehigh Valley Discourse on listener-supported community public radio, WDIY. I'm Alan Jennings, the host tonight of the show with the two Republican candidates for Lehigh County Executive, Scott Ott, who is currently a commissioner, Dean Browning, who is a former commissioner. Why do Republicans hate taxes so much? What's up with that?
You know somebody who loves taxes.
I don't mind paying taxes. Like if I were to approach a busy intersection and there wasn't a street light there put there by my government, I don't know how many people would survive that intersection.
Actually, there was a fascinating article in the Wall Street Journal a number of years ago about a German town that figured out that if they took down the traffic signals, people would have to pay more attention to what was going on, and there were actually fewer accidents when there were no traffic signals, but I know what your point is.
That's a great comeback,
and
Scott.
That's, well, it's true. I think that people understand that government provides an essential service. It's essential for a civil society to operate. But like anything else, people want that to be as efficient and effective as possible, especially when they are, in effect, involuntarily footing the bill for that. It's not like you walk into a store and say, hey, I'm going to choose the government I want here. You have to choose the government you have. You have to pay for the government you have. And so I think people naturally want to know, is government doing what it must do, and is it doing it with a level of efficiency and effectiveness that we would expect from public servants? And every dollar that taxpayer earns came from the sweat of his brow or his labor or his intellect or whatever. Single women who are out there working to raise three kids and have to pay the tax bill, you've got to be very careful with how you expend those dollars. So I would think it's inaccurate to say Republicans hate taxes. I think it probably would be accurate to say that they hate perpetually increasing taxes.
Dean, you got roughed up. A lot of people appreciated the fact that you supported a tough budget a few years ago. It had a tax increase in it. You were the key vote that got that budget through, gaining the respect of a lot of people like me, but also paying a political price for it. Why do Republicans hate taxes so much?
Well, before we get to that, let me go back and make sure it's clear that I never voted for the budgets. I've never in my 4 years as county commissioner ever voted for a budget that increased taxes. What I did do in 2010 was vote against a plan to send the budget back to have the county executive redo it, cut $19 million or 20% of the county's budget. That's what I voted. That was my vote. Back to your question, why do Republicans hate taxes? I don't think they hate taxes. They view them as a necessity. They don't like them. I believe at the bottom of the issue, Republicans are free market and free enterprise individuals. They realize that you need government to provide the rule of law that makes the free markets and free enterprise work. You can't have one for the other. So they see the necessity of taxes. I think the problem that they have, as Scott alluded to, is number one, they don't like wasteful spending, and there is tons of wasteful spending. And secondly, they don't like to see wasteful spending compounded in ways that are counterproductive to the stated intent. I'll use welfare, for example. I don't think anybody would begrudge helping somebody who can't help themselves. But you can't convinced me and other Republicans that over the years that the welfare system hasn't been detrimental to the population that it was originally designed to help. And I think that's part of the reason why Republicans are opposed to taxes or increasing taxes that they view that are going to be spent inefficiently or in a counterproductive manner.
Scott, he brought welfare into the discussion. I didn't anticipate getting into welfare, but it does seem to be the kind of straw man, if you will, that is used to sort of drive a wedge between people. I'm guessing you have general amount of disdain for the welfare system shared by Dean.
I don't think disdain. It depends on what you mean by that. I have disdain for anything that strips the dignity of a person and makes them feel like less than a person, that strips them of their sense of independence and self-worth. I have disdain for anything that when a man or woman comes home at the end of the day, they're hanging their head because they've had another, sort of failed experiment at life, and they have to then sit down at the kitchen table with their kids. And while other dads are telling stories about what happened at work, or other moms are telling stories about what happened at work, they don't have that story to tell, and they become eventually entrapped in this system. I've been unemployed before. It ain't no fun. When you're in a situation where you start to wonder, will I ever be able to get a job again? And what kept me going at that time was the realization that I had to take care of my family. And I was unwilling to rely on the government to do that. Ultimately, though, that wasn't some ideological position. That was a man trying to hold on to his dignity. And I think a lot of times when we try to, did you ever stand at the door of a shopping center? Do this as a social experiment. Go to a shopping center and try to hold the door open, especially for men, when they come through the door. They will practically fight you to open the door for you. Mm-hmm. They want to help you. They don't want you to help them. And so ultimately, I think if we design a social services protocol that is aimed at restoring the dignity of humans, that is aimed at getting people back to being, depending on what their situation is, clean and sober and decently housed and fully employed and giving back as contributing members of society, that should be our objective.
I would love to talk welfare for about 3 hours, because I think a lot of people are unaware of some of the basic aspects of welfare. I think they think people get a lot of money when they're on welfare.
I don't think so.
That there's, the family size is large, and the facts are quite to the contrary. But let me make this personal for a minute. You were at the county commissioners meeting that I was at several weeks or so ago. And I went from a committee meeting at which the commissioners abandoned, at least temporarily, a proposal to kill the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. The Affordable Housing Trust Fund is one of my proud achievements. I was the person that led the effort to get the county to embrace that 20 or so years ago. And I went from that meeting downstairs to the full commissioners meeting, at which on the agenda was the essentially the abandonment of the Green Future Fund. And I don't know if you know it, but the Green Future Fund was my initiative as well.
You're responsible for everything.
We started, well, not everything, but we were the ones that conceived and led that effort. So there I sat, wondering how many people in that room understood that, two major initiatives that were on your agenda to eliminate were mine. And, I sat there trying not to take the whole thing personally. Fortunately, in both cases, you bailed on them, although I don't know for how long. So I guess I would ask the question, is there anything that county government does that you wouldn't cut? Is there a sacred cow that you would say we cannot afford to cut that service or that program at any point? Or is like the whole county budget on the table for reductions?
Let me challenge a little bit what you said about how we bailed on the Green Futures Fund thing and we bailed on the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. What we actually did, but we didn't really bail on it, did we? You were there in the committee meeting and you heard what happened there. What happened was,
on the
Affordable Housing Trust Fund, that we said, canceling a program that's been in effect for 20 years without carefully reviewing what it's done, what the proper funding stream for it might be, what the ultimate objective of it is, how are we measuring whether it's accomplishing those objectives, would be irresponsible. That would be malfeasance. You don't just get rid of it. I don't know that we will get rid of it, but I do know that we're going to have a hearing where we look into and saying, okay, what is this? Is it accomplishing its original objective? How close is it? You know that you and I talked in the hallway afterward, and I said, how much would be fully funding the Affordable Housing Trust Fund? And you said, oh, lots.
Yeah.
You know,
because it's an...
and the funny thing is, we never ask questions like that.
Yeah.
Because what I'm afraid of, and I expressed this to you there, was that politicians want to be seen as if they are doing something about a problem, and that's enough for them. As long as the perception is that they're doing something, a little $250,000, $300,000 annual fund, which, as you know, doesn't scratch the surface of the housing challenges we face in Lehigh County, that's enough for them because they can then campaign and brag that they have done something. I'm interested in what county government is supposed to do, and if we're going to do something, let's do it well.
Yeah, and you know, as I said to you, I welcome the scrutiny. I mean,
that's right.
You know, on my board, I want people that are going to challenge me, even not trust me, because you know they're the governors of my organization, and they should be sure that I'm honest, that I'm straight, that I'm doing my job effectively, and I think that scrutiny is appropriate. But we talked about the delegate versus trustee in the last segment, and here's a case where with the Green Future Fund. We did a poll. We knew that we were going to win 2-1. The commissioners at the time weren't satisfied. They made us go through the trouble and the time consumption and the expense of a voter referendum that passed by the exact margin that our poll said it would. And yet there appeared to be a pretty significant number of people on the board who were prepared to abandon the Green Future Fund. Am I not understanding that?
Well, the issue before us in this particular case wasn't whether or not to abandon the Green Futures Fund. The Green Future Fund had reached the period of time that the voter referendum called for. So it really wasn't a question of, are we continuing the Green Futures Fund? In this particular case, there was about $1 million of funding that the county had already, county administration, the executive's administration, had committed to funding some projects in municipalities, including Allentown and Emmaus and Lower Macungie Township. And our question was, coming out of a budget season where we were told we're out of money and that we're going to be having a $4.1 million structural deficit, where are we getting the $1 million? And so because we believe that the county had already made the commitment to issue those grants, what our interest was is finding the most fiscally responsible way to fulfill that commitment. The commitment had already been made. I think we did that by using Marcellus Shale impact fee money to take care of that. So sometimes I think... We think we're debating about broader questions that are some sort of ideological questions. This was a very narrow question of how do we keep this commitment and what's the most fiscally responsible way to do so.
Dean, do you want to just respond to that? Because I don't want to shortchange it, because that was pretty much a challenge of something the commissioners had done.
You covered really three different segments in that, and I appreciate Scott's response to those. Let me go back to one of your questions about what, if anything, would you cut in county government and what would you consider untouchable?
Off the table, yeah.
There's a primary role for county government that is fairly simple. It is to run the courts, the prison, the district attorney, the sheriff's office, the coroner's office, take care of backroom, what I call backroom activities, voter registration, deeds and wills. Those activities are items that really can't be performed by the private sector. So I consider those basic county government functions, and those are not really up for negotiation that whether or not we're going to do them. Many of those are mandated by the state. The counties are arms of the state and have to fulfill those functions. The other two areas that you mentioned, and we'll go through them, starting with your favorite, affordable housing, that really is an activity that, in my mind, is not a core, and I hate to use that term, core function of county government. It's something that the county does. My concern with that is really twofold. Number one, is it producing the result, the intended result that was envisioned when the program was set up? And secondly, is the money being spent wisely or is it being abused? And I'll give you an example. When I was on the Board of Commissioners, One of the items that the administration wanted to do was spend money from the Affordable Housing Trust Fund to buy $200,000 townhouses, which was, in their mind, an acceptable solution to affordable housing. And I'm sorry, that is more than the average price for most folks who live in Lehigh County who are paying taxes, and for the county to take the position that that's the answer to affordable housing, to me, was absurd, and we stopped that. So I think that as long as you have activities like that that are part of affordable housing, the program is always going to be questioned. Green Futures is another example. Even though voters approved that 10 years ago, that doesn't necessarily mean that we need to do it each and every year. For example, in 2010, as part of the budget process, when Don Cunningham proposed his 16% tax increase, one of the things that we did and I pushed for was a deferral of any spending for Green Futures that year. You've got to take into account the current situation before you determine what you're going to spend on activities that are not specifically core responsibilities of the county.
So voters, 2-1, said, we want you to do this, and you say no, you say not now, you say, I mean, how do you respond to that? I mean, that's like the one thing, that's like the one issue that I can think of over the last 10 years. The county had a clear mandate from voters. This wasn't just, you know, vote for Scott Ott or vote for Dean Browning because they care about this issue. This was, we want you to tax us an average of $2 per household per month to buy and preserve open space.
Now, actually, what the voters did say that they wanted was the county to borrow $30 million.
Well, the reason that
was, well, if the county borrows the money, that really means they don't really necessarily have to tax me, although you have to raise taxes to pay off the
debt. That's why we got the $2.
But I don't think they make that connection in their mind. And to answer your question, that was a decision made 10 years ago. Situations and circumstances change. When that happens, you change your approach.
We could argue about this one for some time, but let's move on.
It's your baby. I don't think we should argue about your baby.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate that. Where does the largest municipality in the county fit into your political agenda? You're not going to get a lot of votes out of the city of Allentown because they're like almost all Democrats, right? Do you turn your back? Do you walk away? Do you ignore the city? Do you see it as needing your attention? We've got this is an issue that requires a lot more time than we have before the break, but let's start on the subject. What do you do with Allentown?
Well, I think about a third of the people who live in Lehigh County live in Allentown, so that's a third of my constituency right there. You can't ignore those folks, and in many ways, county government spends more of its resources and activities in the borders of the city of Allentown than probably anywhere else in the county. That's where the bulk of our human services needs are concentrated. That's where the bulk of our criminal justice services are provided, if you want to look at it that way. And obviously the correctional facility is right downtown in Allentown. All the offices for most of county services are there. Allentown is the core of Lehigh County, and a thriving, prosperous Allentown is essential to a growing and happy community in Lehigh County.
Dean, what do you do with Allentown?
Well, to amplify Scott's points, and I'm sure the numbers may have changed since I was a commissioner, but one statistic that struck me fairly late in my term as commissioner was the statement that 1 in 5 people in Allentown, out of the 355,000, 1 in 5 is below the poverty level.
It's gone up.
And I would wager that the bulk of that 1 in 5 lives in Allentown. So you have a problem with Allentown that you need to address. As Scott said, you cannot have a third of the population of Lehigh County in distress. And that, I think, is the situation in Allentown. Unfortunately, the role that county government has to play in that is somewhat limited. One of the things that I think really needs to be done, and it's more of a long-term solution than a short term, is we've got to change the educational system. We've got to start producing and doing a better job of educating our kids, particularly those in Allentown, or we're going to go another generation and we'll be you'll be here 10 years from now with two other candidates for county executive, and you'll be asking the same question.
Same questions. We're going to have to take another break. You are listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on listener-supported community public radio, WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guests tonight, Dean Browning and Scott Ott, the two candidates for Lehigh County Executive on the Republican side. Stay with us.
For program support on WDIY, we thank ArtsQuest and the Music Fest Cafe, presented by Yuengling, located at the ArtsQuest Center, Steel Stacks in Bethlehem, with performances by the Preservation Jazz Band Saturday, May 9th, the Red Elvises Saturday, May 11th, the Girls, a tribute to Mom with Sarah Ayers, Bev Conklin, and Lori Donovan, Sunday, May 12th, and the Fabulous Thunderbirds, Friday, May 17th. For tickets and information, artsquest.org or 610-332-3378.
Watching my TV, checking out the news, I tell my eyeballs fail to see. I mean to say that every day is just another rotten mess, and when it's gonna change, my friend, is anybody's guess. So I'm watching and I'm waiting, hoping for the best. Even think I'll go to prayer every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day.
All right. Well, you got to love a radio show that uses the mothers of invention to make part of the political point. That was indeed Frank Zappa, who you got to wonder. He said he never took drugs. That was hard for me to believe.
He didn't need to.
He apparently didn't need to. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on listener-supported community public radio, WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guests, Scott Ott, candidate for Lehigh County Executive on the Republican side, Dean Browning, his opponent. Scott, a current county commissioner, Dean, a former county commissioner. Let's just stay with Allentown for a minute. Do you feel that you have any obligation when the city of Allentown's poverty rate is in excess of 30% and the poverty rate in the balance of the county is something like 6%? The poverty rate is literally 6 or 8 times greater. To make any special effort in Allentown? Does that not feel like some compelling public policy demand?
Absolutely. Every time we're sitting in a discussion about some fine thing that the county would like to do, like build a lovely bicycle path somewhere, as much as I enjoy recreation and I'm a walker, I don't have a bike because I'm afraid I'll tip it over again. That's great. But then I go down and I walk around the neighborhood between Tillman and Liberty Street, bounded by 7th Street and down to 4th Street. And I walk past houses with orange stickers in the window that say unfit for human habitation, or I walk past a series of 3 houses that have all burnt and are still sitting there, apparently ignored and abandoned, months, who knows, I don't know when the fire happened. And then I see, on a porch next to the sticker that says unfit for human habitation, there's a little child in a diaper playing, apparently unattended. And I see broken glass on the sidewalks, and I see a parking lot that's with cracked pavement and garbage and a basketball hoop that's hanging on by a rusty screw. I have a hard time getting excited about a recreational bicycle path for people with $700 bikes. I think that if we don't begin to address the problems that ail Allentown, they're not going to stay contained in Allentown.
So don't you think that makes the argument for the Affordable Housing Trust Fund? A lot of Allentown's problem is its housing stock. We've got a housing stock that's obsolete and attracts people that a lot of us wouldn't want to live next to. We got to be honest with ourselves about that. That's not a race issue. That's not a class issue. That's a responsible behavior issue. Don't you think we need to improve the housing stock? And the Affordable Housing Trust Fund is designed to do that.
Well, I'm absolutely interested in finding ways to provide to make sure that in the marketplace there is decent housing available for people at affordable prices. The problem that happens is once government steps in, then politicians who have ambitions and desires that don't necessarily comport with those of the people who most need this housing begin to exercise their authority and their judgment onto the situation. And so you wind up not necessarily doing, as we talked before, not necessarily doing the right thing or having the correct level of government involvement in this, but doing what will look good. And there are a lot of people in downtown Allentown, a lot of people of means financially, who are very interested in seeing that town turn around. And you know some of them personally that are in the process of trying to do that. My guess would be if you let more people into this process and not just turn and look to government and say, hey, what are you guys doing? That little $300,000 a year affordable housing trust fund is not going to address this situation.
Does that mean you'll triple the funding? Or? No, I guess not.
You told me it would take 100 times that.
It would. There's no question about it. Dean, what do you do with the city of Allentown?
Let me respond to your last question about the affordable housing program. And I think you specifically asked, well, isn't that what that program is designed for? And that gets back to the point that I made when I was discussing the program, which is it really accomplishing the result that it was designed to do? Your view is, yes, we should spend money in the exact format that you've identified to address the problem. I agree. I think you hit on a very key point. We need to improve the housing stock in Allentown. The question is, what's the most effective way to do that? Is it for government to buy the homes and rehab them on their own? My argument would be, and this is a proposal that I made when I ran for commissioner in 2007, is take that money that you're going to use for the government to buy the homes and incentivize private individuals to buy the homes and rehabilitate them on their own and rent them out. I think that's the most effective way to improve the housing stock in Allentown, is to take advantage of the private sector and let them do that.
Let's move on to what I consider to be the level of government that really gives us opportunity to make reforms, and that is at the local level. When people speak with considerable distrust and disgust, if you will, of how ineffective government is, I never hear people talk about the level of government where I think the most repetitiveness, the most redundancy is, the most duplication is, and that's at the lowest level of government, the municipal level of government. You know the numbers. We've got in our two counties 62 municipalities. We've got 46 police departments. We've got 41 wastewater systems. We've got 17 school districts. Isn't there real opportunity for us to improve the efficiency of government, modernize it, make it more effective, maybe even at the county level, which I think a lot of us would argue is the ideal place to provide all those services. You know, most southern counties, for example, there aren't individual police departments. There's a sheriff's department. It's a countywide police, law enforcement body. I'm not suggesting that the current sheriff is necessarily capable of being the police chief of the county, but wouldn't there be opportunities there that a leader of the county's government could take advantage of and fix?
I think there are already some situations where voluntary cooperation is happening through the Council of Governments and in other ways. Emergency management is a very cooperative kind of field that's where there's this sort of network of people that are cooperating and working together. The challenge you have is you don't come in with tabula rasa. You know, it's not a clean slate. You can't come in and say, okay, now I've got this sort of idea of how I think everything should operate. Why don't you make one school district, one law enforcement department, one water authority, one whatever. You come in as inheriting the system that has developed over the past 250 years. And as you know, especially in the Mid-Atlantic states and New England, there is a highly intense devotion to local, small bodies of governance.
But they don't even know who their township commissioners are. They don't know who their township. I mean, with no offense to
sure.
the voters who might be listening, I don't think there are very many people who could say, these are the five supervisors in my township.
So if it's a good thing to start consolidating, the first thing you need to ask is, at what level? You know, one of the questions you ask is, why consolidate it at the county level? Why not consolidate it multi-county? Why not consolidate it at the state level? And ultimately, what you've seen over the years is the federal government has become more and more the locus of responsibility and revenue for the states, as the states have become kind of departmental appendages in many ways of the federal government. That's the tendency. If the local people want to join together voluntarily with others, I think that's your best way forward to make the case, to say, look, you know, if you wanted to have one school district in Lehigh County instead of 9 or 10 school districts, let's find a way so that people would want to do that. Now, of course, with high school football, you're never going to get that.
That would be tough because, man, wouldn't it be horrible if the Hornets couldn't play the Trojans?
That's right.
Dean, would you see an opportunity as a leader of the county to modernize governance at the local level, or is that not an issue?
No, absolutely I do. At the beginning of the show, I mentioned that I'm from Kentucky, and the basic form of government there is the county government. I grew up in Marion County. That was the government. There was no Lebanon or Gravelswitch or Bradford or the other little boroughs that are out there. I think the forms that we have here, as Scott mentioned, go back 250 years when time and distance dictated that form of government. That has long passed. I think, to answer your question, there is an opportunity here, and primarily, I think, with the police force. I think that's the first place to start. As county executive, that would be my focus, is to move towards a countywide police force.
Water, wastewater. You guys jumped in a way that surprised some of us, disappointed me, I got to tell you. My view is that Lehigh County Authority's lease of the water system and wastewater system in downtown is about the best option we could have gotten. I'm guessing you're thinking otherwise. And Scott, I know you were involved in this discussion.
Well, I would hesitate to describe it as us jumping in. It was actually something that was splashed upon us. So
just to carry the water,
yes,
metaphor.
Exactly. You know, we weren't looking for this, but the Lehigh County Authority, which some folks that I've talked to, actually, as I visit people in the neighborhoods and talk to voters, don't really understand that the Lehigh County Authority is not part of the Lehigh County government. It is a quasi-governmental entity that was...
Insofar as you as executive would appoint the board members.
Well, we appoint the board members, and we can, the commissioners can dissolve the authority, but other than that, we have no control over what the Lehigh County Authority does. Now, that is the legal situation. The practical and political situation is, if the Lehigh County Authority were to get itself into a situation where, let's say, it had a huge amount of debt and something went wrong, things went bad, unexpected expenses cropped up, sinkholes began to swallow up resources, technically the bondholders of the Lehigh County Authority and the ratepayers would be the ones who are culpable and liable for that. But in reality, the practical political truth is that people would come to Lehigh County and say, you need to do something. Remember Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They were quasi-governmental organizations.
Right.
Congress didn't have to bail them out. So what we looked at was, you have to, when you're a legislator, you have to look at worst-case scenario. What happens if things go badly here? And we've got a pure debt deal where the authority was going to be borrowing, at that time we thought around $200 million. It turned out to be $220 million plus fees and stuff like that. What happens if that goes bad? Who's going to take care of that? So what we did was we said, well, we're not going to extend your charter for an additional 14 years so that you can bid on this with the intent of keeping them out of the bidding pool.
Right.
The next day, there was a plan B announced in the newspaper. The mayor sort of tweaked the bid specs a little bit and made it possible for LCA to bid. At this point, it's out of our hands. But the way the whole process has happened has been disturbing to a lot of people, the way the city has kind of shut down dissent. And even though they say they've conducted endless hours of debate, the reality is there was very little substantive input from anybody outside of the close circle around the mayor himself.
Dean, what would you have done with the LCA and Allentown water discussion?
Well, first, I think it's important to provide some background to that. And I mentioned that because one of the first things that I became active in politically here locally was the Allentown pension deal, which is really at the root of this problem. I recall going on Bobby Gunther Walsh's show back when it was an hour long.
He loves me, by the way.
With Scott's colleague, Vic Mazziotti.
He wants you to co-host.
Vic Mazziotti, myself, and Scott Armstrong went on for an hour to point out the problems with the pension deal, went to Allentown City Council, urging them not to approve it, yet they did. And that's really the root of the problem that led us to this point. I mentioned that as background because it's important to realize that that's where we are, and that's the situation that the elected officials in Allentown have to deal with. They have to come up with a solution to fund the liability that they've incurred with the pension plan. Otherwise, to continue to do it on a year-after-year basis is going to consume all the money that they have available for their basic services. So I view the decision to lease or sell the water system the best out of a number of bad options. And given that that was going to happen, that the Allentown water system was going to be sold or leased, I think LCA was the best choice for that process.
Dean, I and Scott, I see it as the beginning of the hopeful opportunity to do more consolidation in the water and wastewater system. It doesn't make any sense to me to have 41 water and wastewater systems in Lehigh Valley. Some of the biggest funders of the Republican Party, the Lehigh Valley Partnerships executives, are very much in support of that. So I don't think that's like a liberal, you know, conservative Republican Democrat thing. I think it's just a management thing. And Dean, I just want to ask you if you think that the team of reformers that I think is fair to say Scott leads, Vic Mazziotti, Lisa Scheller, Michael Schwer, and Tom
Creighton.
That's it. Do you think they're overreaching?
No, I don't. And in deference to my opponent Scott, I look back over the year that they've been in office, and I'm not quite sure exactly what they have reformed. They were touting themselves as the reform team, but I'm looking back and saying exactly what have they reformed. The budget deficit this year is bigger than it was last year. We still have the same number of employees this year as we did last year. I know Scott will say that he's changed the conversation, and I'm not quite sure exactly what that means. I don't really see exactly what they've reformed. They've gone through, we had an initiative on the ballot that would have allowed voters to determine if they want to have row officers elected or appointed. That was turned down. That, to me, is anti-reform.
Scott, we've got about a minute for you to respond.
I'm not interested in defending myself against of what Dean has said, but I will tell you what I think we have accomplished. For 4 years, and maybe before that, the county commissioners had attempted the same strategy with a Republican majority to try to cut spending in county government. That strategy repeatedly failed. What they would do is they'd propose a number of line item cuts, and then ultimately some of those would pass, some of those wouldn't, but ultimately the amended budget would fail. And so what we decided to do was to say to the executive, look, we'll set the parameters, you decide where the cuts will fall. That strategy wound up initiating a negotiation that got actual spending cuts and an actual tax cut.
In the course of my life, I've seen monks set themselves on fire in Vietnam. I've seen students jump out of buildings in South Korea and people trying desperately to get what we have, and we seem so easy or so quick to just ignore, and that is the right of franchise, the right to vote. You know, I think both of you have contributed a lot to the debate, and what I just hope is that every person out there takes advantage of their opportunity that is, you know, pretty unique around the world, and that is the opportunity to vote, form your own government. And Scott Ott, Dean Browning, you both deserve the thanks of all voters for being willing to put yourself out there and take a shot at this, and you can be sure that whoever gets elected, you'll be talking to me at some point in time, and I hope in a constructive way. So thanks for listening. I'm Alan Jennings, Lehigh Valley Discourse. My guests tonight, Scott Ott and Dean Browning, candidates for Lehigh County Executive. Next week, we will have the two Democratic candidates for Mayor of Bethlehem, Bob Donchez and Willie Reynolds. Hope you listen in then, too. Thanks so much for listening tonight. Have a great week.
Say you want a revolution.